Mr. Pradhan, honorable members, we're hoping not to be here for too long. My understanding is, honorable members, we had discussed, I'm not sure what draft it was, but we had discussed a draft and asked the legal team to go and incorporate what we had debated and discussed, bring it back to us, so that we look at it and satisfy ourselves that they indeed have incorporated what we had agreed to, both in the principle and in the regulations. And once we're happy with that, we will then ask them to go and do whatever is necessary to get this bill to the National Assembly. And it's certification or whatever it is, that type of thing. Now, there seems to be a little bit of confusion, and I'm looking at Chief Whip to assist me here. My understanding, honorable members, is that on Tuesday we are going to adopt a report. We are going to adopt the bill. We are going to adopt the regulations and the objects of the bill. So those are the four pieces of paper, which will then go to the National Assembly. At National Assembly level, we will debate the report, which includes all those documents that we're talking about. The House will ratify, reject, or whatever they're going to do. That is the end of this ad hoc committee, because from there, it goes to NCOP and wherever it goes to. That's the process going forward. There is certainly not going to be a third round of public hearings. There isn't. This is the end of the road for us. So in other words, we're two meetings shy of concluding our business. Tuesday, we will formally adopt all the reports, have them ATC'd. On Thursday, we will debate the report, which is inclusive of all the documents. Thereafter, the powers that be do whatever it is they need to do with them, including taking it to the NCOP, to the President, and everywhere else. So I thought let's clarify that, because there seems to be confusion even amongst our own ranks at leadership level. So I'm looking at you, Deputy Chief, because unless I'm misunderstanding it, please clarify it for us, purely from the basis of the leadership of this institution.
Thanks, Chairperson, afternoon colleagues and ladies and gentlemen. I think it's true what you are saying, Honorable Chairperson. We have already started with consultations, and we have also noted objection from one political party. So that's the understanding, that on Tuesday we will be adopting everything that we have been doing as this ad hoc committee. From there, the consultation was about the waiving of the 3 days rule. So that is what we consulted other parties about. So it will be taken to the House for debate and adoption. So the deadline for this committee is the 30th of November. So that's the end of it for us. Thanks.
All right. So, Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chairperson, good afternoon, colleagues. I was at the meeting this morning of programming where the item consideration of report of this committee came up, which is fine. If we are saying that the report includes the bill for adoption by the House, I personally have no problem with that. But I'd just like to be sure that in terms of the rules, we're doing the right thing. Because normally, you'll have a report of a committee, then you'll have the matter being debated on anything. You'll have the report, and then you'll have a second reading debate or whatever on the bill. But this is not a normal kind of bill, because it's a bill that emanates from Parliament, from Parliament itself. So I think we just need to check that out, because if it's then going to be consideration of report and debate, then it must be clear on that order paper that it is that. And the report must include make mention of the bill, so then we can debate the whole thing. Like I said, I have no fundamental problem, but we've just got to make sure that the rules allow us to do that, save for the fact that we can waive the three-day rule, which we are in support of as a political party. Thank you.
All right. Let's clarify that, honourable members. Introduction, this is a committee bill. Let's start there, that this is not an executive bill, it's a committee bill. In terms of Rule 283.5, a bill initiated and introduced by a committee of the National Assembly does not have a first reading, but on introduction must be placed directly on the order paper for a second reading. That's according to Rule 283.5. And I'm under the impression that that is what we're laboring under. So when we take it to the House, because it's not a bill from the executive, it is, if you want to say report plus second reading or whatever, I don't mind how you craft it, but it's in terms of Rule 283.5. So I'm hoping that there's total clarity on that. I don't know if you want to talk to it, Michael, but that's how I understand it, that this, honourable members, would be the third last interaction of this committee. It's today, it's Tuesday, and then it's on the 30th. And if it means on the ATC we must clarify the heading, then I'll look at Cindy and whoever else has to clarify the heading, that it's the report which is inclusive of everything else. Is that all right, Honourable Singh? And then Honourable Matthijs,
yes.
On... So that we have clarity where we are.
Chairperson, yeah, no problem. And let me say, it was not our party that objected when the Deputy Chief Whip said there was a party that objected. I don't want to say. And because I spoke to it, it was not us.
We must never be ashamed of objecting. What this wavering three-day period, I'm confused about that. What does that mean? Can someone speak to that? And then I think we must make it very clear that we're presenting the report along with the bill when it's tabled as well, and that the debate is also around the actual bill and not just the report. Okay.
Absolutely, my sister, it's like that. That's what we're saying. That's what we're going to clarify. My understanding of the, if again, Rule 292, the second reading debate on a bill introduced by a committee and which has not been referred to a joint committee in terms of Rule 283 may not commence before at least 3 working days have lapsed since it's been introduced. That's the rule, that there must be 3 days, 3 days must lapse from the time you introduce it. But because we're introducing it on Tuesday and we want to debate it on Thursday, it will be within those 3 days. We are asking them to condone or to waive that rule. That's all that we say. Under normal circumstances, you can't do it before 3 days, but because of circumstances, we've gone to leadership and said, please waive that rule. And that is what we're talking about in terms of the waiving of the 3 days. Otherwise, it means that the House must reconvene specially just for this matter. Ikakwe, Nyabo. That's fine. So, Cindy, I hope you are at ease. Michael and Prof, I hope you're at ease. I'm at ease. Everybody's at ease. Honourable members, we have before us the draft bill. We have before us the draft regulations that we were hoping that we would go through today, just to make sure that it has captured everything that we discussed. And if it has, or if they have those two documents, then we're going to ask the team to do the necessary in terms of taking it there. Can we start with the easier one, Honourable Members? the regulations, and these were given to members, I think, this morning. So if we could just take the easier one in terms of quantum, the regulations. It's either on page 22 or those of us that have, it's page 22 of the document that was submitted, that was emailed earlier this morning by Cindy. Page 22. Page 22, honourable members, up to page 29, or 25, I beg your pardon. Members have got that document?
Yeah.
Really what we had asked them to do was to introduce the two-thirds, one-third, that is 2A. Are we happy with that? Or do you want to go close by close again? Okay. Close one, any changes? Or are we happy that close one includes everything? Close one? The definitions? Honourable Mulder. Ah, very fine. Honourable Sam.
I'm the one with the beard.
That's
all right. There's going to be an issue that I'm going to raise slightly later, because I think it's a definitional problem, around whether or not political parties ought to be more carefully defined, including here, because if you look at each of the political parties and you go back to the definition in the Principal Act, political parties don't necessarily mean represented political parties. So what I'm saying here is that unless you do that in some clever way, you can find people who are not represented claiming money from the funds. Shake your head again. Please explain why I'm wrong.
No, we're talking about definitions. So you're suggesting we put the definition of political parties under definition. Is that what you're suggesting?
It's defined in the Principal Act. But it simply says includes, I'll find it, includes entities or whatever the thing is. No, in the Principal Act, which is the only definition, at the bottom of page 4. It says political party includes any entity that accepts donations to support or oppose any registered party or its candidates in an election. Now, clearly what you've got is you've got three, if you like, things. You've got an entity referred to there. You've got registered political parties. You've got represented political parties. And you may even have unregistered political parties. Who knows? But it's not clear, and I think we need clarity, because in the Principal Act, that to the extent that there's money coming from the fund, at least, that it goes to represented political parties only. And maybe the way around that is to insert the words in sub 2 of 2 to say to each of the represented political parties.
No, that's why I thought if we dealt with the regulations, and I agree with you. When we get to the principle, I agree with you, by the way, that it must be unambiguous that we're talking about political parties who have at least one seat. That's what we're saying. We must be very clear on all those things, so I agree with you. If it's unclear in any way, we will clarify that one when we get there. But in terms of page 22, 1, is there anything that we would want to change? 22.1.
May I just stop us there and just go back? Represented political party is defined. So all that needs to be changed is actually the schedule, not to go back to the Principal Act. It's actually here where we need to change it.
Schedule page? You got the page?
Well, it's paragraph 1, page 22. And allocated monies means monies allocated from the funds to a political party. And we've already defined represented political party.
A political party as alluded to in chapter X or Y.
We changed it to represented political party.
Okay. Will you do that? Okay. I think we then are right. Okay. So you'll make that one amendment for us. Anything else on number 1 of page 22? Welcome, Honourable Mulder. We're just going through regulations. We'll go through the rest. And making sure that what is covered here is what we discussed. Any changes on number 2 on page 22? Or have they captured everything as we'd asked them to? I think that's the question that we're asking. Have they captured everything we've asked them to, yes or no, on the board itself?
Yeah, then they must just be represented there as well.
So wherever you say political parties, you'll put that as whatever the case might be. Find a clever way of doing that. I think that's what we're saying. On page 23, number 3, anything that we still need included, excluded? 22, number 3, on the top of page 23.
May I just, I'm sorry to be a pedant, but it says here, proportionately amongst the participating parties in any, again, I just suggest we say the represented political parties.
Fine. We are on page 23, number 3. Page 23? Okay. Let's agree, honourable members, that, right? No, no, I'm looking at the regulations. Have you got a different page? Oh, I see. Oh, okay, I beg your pardon. I printed before you guys got the final product. I'm sorry, honourable members. Let me just... Okay, I've got an advanced copy because I had to make sure they did what you wanted them to do. Page 22, number 3. Sorry. Any changes on page 22, number 3? No. Page 23, number 4. We've discussed all these things clause by clause. We just want to make sure that they've captured what we've asked for. Yeah. Can I move on from number 4? You'll indicate if I must move on, ma'am. All right. And remember, honourable members, there's still be, you know, we're hoping that there's no other bite of the cherry later on, because we're going to ask them to go and do everything they want to do for Tuesday. So if you want to take your time, I'm happy with that. That's why we gave it to you. Page 23, number 5, 1 and 2. Any changes? We didn't ask them to change anything from there from the last time. Page 23, 5, 1 and 2. Honourable Matthijs.
Just the same thing. I think we must make sure that we are consistent with putting represented political parties on, yeah? Because here again it just says, what is the participating political parties or something. So just for consistency.
Okay. Honourable legal and honourable support, please make sure that that happens for us. No, no, we're not asking you to, we will keep on reminding you so you can make an asterisk when we pick it up. Page 23, number 6, 1 and 2. Manner of payment, again, we never asked them to change anything there, so it's been with us for a long time. Happiness? Thank you. Page 23, number 7. All they did, yes, Honourable Singh.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. The figure is correct, but I don't know in terms of drafting. Do you put a 1-5 or do you write 15? Which is, it will apply also to the next one, 5 million. I don't know in terms of drafting. You write it as 5 or you write it as 15?
Figures or words? Or both? Okay, let's do both. Why can't we do both? Right? No.
Wrong mic. Well, I chose the number, Chair, but there's no problem with putting in the words here, but it's ordinarily the number above 10. Put a number. So I'm not going to put the 10 million with all the zeros. So that's why I put the number 15, but it's 15 million. but I can change it to a word.
Okay. Would you be more comfortable with the word? Mr. Singh, you raised it. Would
it's like one half a dozen of the other. But I think if you write 15, it will be better.
Fine, just write 15. Fine. All right. Page 24. Yes, sorry, ma'am.
Okay, I'm just a tad confused, and I'm sure you're going to clarify me. These caps. Oh, gosh, now I'm so lost. Hold on. The number 24, number 7, right? It says the amount contemplated in section 8.5, right? But I've got 8.5 on here. So when I go to 8.5 of the bill, it's... So yeah, this is upper limit donations, right? 23, page 23. Oh, we all got different pages. Okay, we are...
23, number 7.
Okay, yeah, number 7 says 8.2,
yes.
Right, and then?
That's not 8.2.
Then 24, number 8, that's the one you're talking about, Honorable Matthijs, do you want to talk to it now? That is the one that talks about... You recall we spoke about the foundations. So there's a cap for individual funders, there's a cap for foundations. And number 8 is talking to the foundation cap.
But this thing is not very clear. It just says, my understanding when we were having these discussions is that when we were talking about the foreign entity, it was mainly talking about donations in kind, mainly in terms of training. So the way this whole thing is spelled out, it's almost like, okay, we can accept donations to 5 million rand a financial year. And our debate was around the issue of training and the donations in kind in training.
I think what we also debated at the time was that we must quantify in kind. So 8.5 talks about training and policy. All here we're saying is that all those training and policy things that you do can't, when we quantify it independently, exceed 5 million rand. But it's not saying you'll get 5 million rand cash. It's the equivalent of that. I think that's what we understood. Yes. If you think that we can clarify it any further in terms of crafting, Honorable Matthijs, you can do it. But the principle is not cash, but kind, and we must equate the kind in terms of rand value. All right. Number 9 on page 24, all we did is we put the rand value of 100. Okay. Number 9, page 24, number 10. There were no changes there. 24, number 11. That deals with the regulations. So we are all on the same page with regulations. You'll have to go and do what is necessary to take it to a stage that it is acceptable at the National Assembly and beyond. In terms of the memorandum on the objectives, my understanding that this was just a summary of what is happening. We don't have to go through that, Honourable Members. We agree. We accept it as it is. No? You want to look at it, ma'am? Yeah? Fine. You want to go page by page? All right. If you want to go page by page so that we don't cut anything we can. But this is just an easy version of the bill. So that somebody who does not look at the bill is looking at a word version of the bill, really. It says what is in clause 1 and what is in clause 2 and what is in clause 3 and what is in clause 4. That is the intention. I'm looking at Mr. Prince and others. On page 26.1, anybody wants to have any discussions on point 1, page 26? Honourable Lees.
Just for clarity, the memorandum has no legal standing at all. Thank you, then that's fine.
It's really an easy version of the bill. Number 2 on page 26. Page 27, it's really just that interpretation, honourable members. It's nothing that anybody can refer to and say, but on that document, this is what you say. Page 28. Page 29. Page 30, people who participated and who were consulted in the main. And then finally page 31. Almal gelukkig. As it so is, thank you, Baie. And then that then deals with the second of the documents that will be part of our report. Can we then go to the principal act, honourable members? Principal draft bill, sorry. Then we had asked for a few changes. Now we can go through it word by word. I've gone through it and I've marked my one, but we can go through it page by page if we so wish. And can we then move directly to page number 2? Is there any improvements or any thing that they put in there that we shouldn't ask them to put in because they've smuggled it in or they, whatever the case might be. On page 2, Honourable Gumede, page 2.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It's just a question of emphasis. My view, and it may be wrong, is that the first paragraph on page 3, that is, it should be that is whereas it is important to depend deepen democracy, promote the national interest, and to protect the sovereignty of the republic. My view is that should be the first paragraph in the preamble. That is my view.
Right, so it's just about ordering. Anybody got a problem with that? Honourable Mulder, just the ordering.
I apologise, Chairperson, I didn't listen, but I think I should have. Could Honourable Gumede just...
I'll repeat it for you.
Please.
Okay. If you go to page number 3, yes. And whereas right on top of page 3, he's suggesting that should be the first whereas, and everyone else follows because he says that's probably... So it's just about the ordering and not about the content. Any problems with that suggestion?
Not a real problem, Chairperson. It's true. It's absolutely true. But the current preamble starts off taking us to the founding the provisions in the Constitution as a point of departure in terms of accountability, openness, and multi-party democracy. So it's a question, do we start with the founding provisions in Section 1? Or do we start off by saying we want to enhance multi-party democracy? It's either, but the current draft starts with the founding provisions, and it's nothing material or anything.
Okay. Half a dozen of one, I think we'll say, and six of the other. Which one do we want? Help us out, Comrade Honourable Matthijs.
On that point, I'm neither here or there about it. I think it would be better for us to keep in line with what the Constitution is talking about in terms of the multi-party or in terms of the funding. And I would actually add the word strengthening multi-party democracy because that is what section, what is it? The preamble, yeah? Is that where we are? We're talking about adding in a line saying protecting the sovereignty of...
Yeah, we're taking page 3. Look at page 3. On the top of page 3, all you are saying, that one on page 3 must be the first one.
Yeah, I think it should be the second.
The second one.
I would agree with that. But I would say that we must... We've got the foundational values of accountability and openness in a multi-party democracy. And then where's the section that says in strengthening multi-party democracy? Because ultimately that section of the Constitution uses exactly that word. Or political party funding.
It's got this third one.
Strengthening.
You look at the third one. To enhance multi-party democracy.
Oh,
look
okay.
at the third one. You comfortable with that?
No, I don't see the third
The third, no, on page 2. Page
something
2.
Something very wrong with my
stuff. Preamble, page 2, the third whereas. Are you with us? You with us?
I have found it. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. So we will take the last whereas, Michael and your team, and you'll make it the second one. Otherwise, we're happy with page 2. Thank you so much. Page number 3. Any improvements on page 3? None. Thank you so much. On page 4, I'm going to take the entire page so members can point where they want to, but the entire page 4, any suggestions of improvement, Honourable Self?
Thank you very much indeed. And the first is a minor textual amendment about halfway down. When it's referring to donation in kind, I would suggest that between A, the Roman 4, and B, the word and gets replaced with but. That includes this, but it does not include that.
You there?
The second is what I alluded to earlier, because I just want to make absolutely clear in my own mind about what we're dealing with here. Under the definition of political party. Are we dealing here with registered political parties or anything that goes by that advances a political objective?
In terms of political party.
Correct. You see, as my honourable colleague referred to, registered political parties, we know what they are. They're people that are in the National Assembly or the provincial legislatures. But political party includes any entity that accepts donations. We had a debate about it the other day, and we know what we're talking about there. That's a sort of front organisation, if you like. But when it comes to the obligations to, you know, from chapter 4 onwards, the duties of political parties, one needs to know what one's dealing with here. So if a political party includes an entity that accepts donations to support it, so there's a political action committee or something like that, it needs to furnish the commission with the information that is required from chapter 4 onwards. And every other political party, whether registered or unregistered. Is that what we're saying?
Just to add to that, I thought we are very clear that the political party we're talking about here is a political party that is represented. So, and because that was the argument that Honorable Ndagana raised, that you can't, if you leave it as it is, Sanko and everybody else becomes a problem. That's what the argument, and I thought that's what we understood. If that's what we understood, then it means includes any entity that accepts donations must come out. I'm saying that's what we understood the debate to be. Turn the page around, yeah? And then? Okay,
So the question that I'm asking is, why would we define a political party and a represented political party if here we're dealing just with political? That's just an ignorant question that I'm asking. You can explain that. Can we pose all the questions and we'll ask them to answer it? Yes, ma'am.
But mine is in response to that. We were dealing with, remember we were talking about there are parties that are registered with the IEC, and then they're not represented necessarily in either parliament or in the legislature, but they do attract funding. So there are things that they will get donations, and they must also be able to. So we had that debate and discussion. I can't remember exactly what it is that we decided on, but we did say we must have a section of, say, political parties as those represented or registered with the IEC, because we also discussed at length whether they should pay those election fees. Remember, all those things came in. And then we said in terms of the actual funding that we get from the Multi-Party Democracy Fund and the Represented Political Party Fund only applies to, yeah. But in terms of them receiving funding, they must be able to submit records, because they are a registered political party with the IEC and they do attract some sort of funding at some point. They must be able to submit their financial statements and whatever it is to the IEC. That's why we have the two different definitions of represented political parties and political parties. Those were our discussions, and this is how this has come about.
Now you guys are going to... Yeah, maybe that was a discussion. I really thought that after all this debate was done and dusted, we thought the cleanest way is only to talk for represented political parties, because how do you distinguish Vincent Smith and his laptop? And he's called himself a political party. I thought we had that discussion. Yes, I thought we had that discussion. So the only question that I'm asking, I don't have a problem, is do we need to put this last bullet or the last definition on page 4? Do we need it? And if we do need it, where do we refer to it in any other piece of legislation, in any piece of page here? If it doesn't refer to anything here, why are we putting it in? That's the question that I'm asking.
I look at it, I happen to agree largely with your reasoning on this matter, because really the problem is, particularly with this rather wide definition, is the IEC going to have the capacity to know what's a political party, what isn't a political party, what's a pressure group, what's a front organization, etc., etc., etc.? So, I mean, if we mean registered political parties, then we will say registered political parties. If we say represented political parties, then we must say it's represented political parties. And I thought I heard my honourable colleague to say that we should adopt a sort of incremental approach to this, to see how we go, and to start at least with represented political parties.
Right. My question, you've heard the debates on the side. The point that we're putting to you, if you totally deleted the last bullet on page 4, would it be a problem? I'm looking at you guys here. Would it have any impact anywhere else? Yes, before you answer that question, Honourable Mona. Unless, look, we don't have to ask them. If we think that we don't want it and it's not going to cause legal problems, we can say that. We don't have to ask for their advice, but I always want to defer to them. But if you want to, yeah.
Yes, I think we should ask them. I think it's a problem if we do remove it. For the following reason, we are talking about different things here. And I think the misunderstanding is because of the term political party. Maybe the emphasis should not be on the political party, but it's all about an entity. In other words, what this is trying to prevent, and you'll find it further on in the bill itself, you now have all the provisions to control what political parties should do and how they should declare and how transparent they should be and the threshold, etc., etc. But now comes some entity. And none of these provisions are going to have any impact on that entity. But that entity circumvents the whole bill by someone giving millions of donations to that entity. And what is that entity doing? That entity is running a campaign during an election on behalf of the party or a specific candidate by spending those millions of rands on behalf of that person or that party. That's what it's about. So it's a way to prevent that from happening. It's an easy way to circumvent the whole provisions in the bill. Now it's called, in the definitions it says political party, and then it says include an entity. So now we are, in our minds, thinking in terms of political party and registered political parties. So this is really about an entity, whatever that entity may be. Look at the definition. It says, an entity that accepts donations to support or oppose any registered party or its candidates in an election. And if you come to the provisions later on, I'm not sure where they are, but they are there. It says that this cannot be a way to circumvent all the provisions and all the thresholds and all the transparencies and things if you do not make provision to curtail that. And it's not why, it's specific by saying when, if you support or oppose when, the candidate or a party when during an election. That's what it says. So I think that was the purpose. And we should not perhaps think in terms of political party or not. It's about an entity. How do you describe that to prevent that circumvention? But the drafters can perhaps give their impression. That's what I understand.
Dr. Mulder's description is precisely, I think, what is intended by the clause. Because if you exclude it, you then allow any entity to collect, to solicit donations, receive donations, and use that money to advertise, put advertisements on television in support of a party or against a party. And that's why the language is so careful. This entity is not Sanko. Sanko gets its money from very different purposes. Sanko does not accept donations for the purpose of supporting the ANC in an election. If it does, then it would be getting itself into trouble. But from my knowledge of Sanko and its own constitution, although it might be in alliance with the ANC, doesn't solicit donations for the purposes of supporting the ANC in an election. Sanko can donate to, but nothing here prevents Sanko from donating to a political party. The second point, this is not ideological, and I think one of the concerns was, what about environmental NGOs? What about anti-abortion advocates? Again, those entities or non-governmental organizations are what you call single-purpose organizations. They're against a particular aspect that one party or another party might hold. But if they accept donations for the purpose of supporting or opposing a registered party in an election, then they'd be hit by this particular provision. So it's really quite open. Now, the reason why it sits like it is now, and we have this difference between a political party and a representative political party, is because we were told to just not separate, as we tried to do in the proposed wording 2 days ago, where we spoke about a third-party entity, because we felt that because of public submissions, this wasn't our proposal, bear in mind these are public submissions saying that political party is too wide, because political party includes unregistered political parties, registered political parties, of which there's something like 360, and then represented political parties, which are not just represented at national and provincial level, but also those that might be at a local level. So we had wording to try and restrict this concept down to only parties that had representation in any one of the three levels, and then include this entity with that particular definition. And the wording in that third-party entity that we refer to, and I used, remember if I told you, that third-party was the language that is used in electoral laws generally. But I'm not wedded to what that word is. But really, that was the structure. And certainly we can prepare a much tighter definition, but we were told, go back as it was in Section 8 and put it in Section 1, and that's what we've done. But we can do, because we've in fact done wording, and that wording would say a political party means
a represented political party that's represented now in the, as it's defined, which is national and provincial legislature, a political party that has representation at municipal level, and what we call a third party entity, but we can dispense with that. Then that would be your definition. So it would be very clear that you're dealing with political parties per se, as we all understand them, and then these fronts, okay, these entities, these fronts, and that they also regulated here. And then we're going to suggest a second provision, which required anybody that the entity to register with the Electoral Commission. Now, if we look at the Electoral Commission Act, the definition of political party includes these entities, but there is no obligation to register. So you really have a choice. There's a choice here of just having all political parties with the administrative and other difficulties that you have, but that will then definitely cover these fronts. Alternatively, you have a tighter definition along the way that Mr. Prince and myself have drafted, together an obligation that if you are going to raise money for the purposes of advertising in support of a party or opposed to a party, okay, in an election, that's all qualifying limits what we are talking about here, then you must register, and then of course, once registered, you're under the control and ambit, and then you're not dealing with 360 entities. You'll be dealing with those few entities that specifically have the wish to support or oppose. But in fact, once you've done that, then it's just easier to fund the political party. So this is really a way of avoiding, and this is what's happened throughout the world with electoral laws. Africa, Europe, Asia, elsewhere. Because this is what happens. And I think Dr. Mulder, on Tuesday made the point that as soon as you introduce restrictions on political parties, then they create these entities they've created. And that's why these laws have developed regulation of these types of entities.
All right, with that explanation, I think what Prof. Cheadle is saying doesn't affect the Ndakane problem, because the Ndakane problem is not a elections vehicle, it's a throughout the life vehicle. So I think that was his concern. The question then is back to Honorable Mulder, should we say in bold, as we have it there, political parties, or should we say political entities? What should we leave it as it is, political parties, or if we're happy with that, then let's leave it. I think we understand what they're trying to cover. It's just that it must not confuse us, that we don't talk about political parties as we understand them to be. And the question is, how do we tighten up the wording? Honorable Self.
Well, then I would suggest, if that is indeed the intention, that what one would then do is not to say in an election, but to say during an election period as defined in the Electoral Commissions Act. Then I would have said accepts donations either solely or principally to support or oppose any registered political party, because then you've covered both bases.
Honourable Chase.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think it's necessary for us to say actually in the election, during a election period, because, I mean, it can happen throughout the financial year. So I don't know what legal binding reason why we would have to include the word during an election period, or that they oppose or support during that period. It could just be in generically that could be their role. I am a bit iffy about using the word political party if we're referring to an entity, but then we might just be getting a bit messy having a political entity and a political party. But remember, we have the understanding over here, right, because we're having a discussion and we're getting clarity. But, I mean, the whole point of this is that the public must be able to pick this up and they must be able to understand what it is that we're talking about. So maybe we should have a discussion of, because we don't have registered political party as a definition here, right? We just have a represented political party, which has to be registered with the IEC, and then this phrase of a political party, which would also cover those that are registered with the IEC and those that are not covered. So do we bring in a second definition of those that are registered with the IEC? And I do like the idea that maybe we include a clause that say that if you are doing any political work in support of a political party or its candidate, that perhaps it must be registered with the IEC. I'm open to, you know, discussions and input, but that's my input on it.
Honourable
Committee,
do you want to speak on that point?
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think for purposes of elucidation, perhaps, what is the difference between a registered party and a registered political party in this context? A registered party and a registered political party. Under four political party, under the definition. How would you make a difference between the two? Between a registered political party and a registered party?
On which page are you talking to, Honourable?
Page 4.
Page 4, yes. And bullet point?
The last one, at the bottom.
You talked about political party or oppose any registered party.
Yeah.
Are you there with that? And the question is, what's the difference between registered and representatives?
Registered party and a registered political party.
Thank you, Chair. It's meant to be political party. So if we need to clear up the confusion, we'll add the word political before party. So it's meant to be a registered political party. We thought it was clear, but clearly it's not, so we'll change the wording.
You got that into that one? You can deal with that one, but then I think what we are saying is we want to close any loopholes for France. That's what we want to do, close loopholes for France. Now, if members here have some clever wording, please send it to them. If you guys can think about something, please send it to us, because it's about a definition. And when we get to where it affects us in terms of the content, we can revert to it. Can we leave that one saying they must go and clean it up? Is that okay?
I agree, Chairperson. They must just remember what Mr. Self also said in terms of what he proposed. I think that clears it up. But I think that made a difference.
All right. Outside of that, can we then go to page... Oh, no, hold on. I had a point here, and I don't know. If you go to foreign person, means... any person or entity other than a citizen or a permanent resident. I thought we had that discussion that said, but why is a permanent resident not regarded as a foreign person? Now, I'm saying if you, for instance, are a permanent resident, but you are of, you've got a Portuguese passport. I'm not talking about dual whatever. You've got a Portuguese passport, but you're here. Or when you're saying, does a permanent resident have to have some sort of South African document? I'm just asking the question. Because, and I'm talking just from a layman. You guys would help me. I mean, you get somebody that comes here from wherever, is permanent, and then he donates to a political party. Is that not another way of circumventing foreign donors donating from a foreigner, but because you happen to be sitting in South Africa at the time, even though you're not a South African citizen, you are able to donate. I'm only asking the question, is that a loophole or not? What is this thing called permanent resident? What is a permanent resident? Can a permanent resident vote? And if he can't vote, why are you calling him a permanent resident and not a citizen? Do you understand the question that I'm asking, or is it a potential loophole? I'm just asking the question, but you can help us on it yourself.
Chairperson, we did have a discussion about it, and I think after a long discussion, we agreed on this formulation. A permanent resident is somebody who is given a permanent resident certificate, or determined to remain in the Republic, and it's very difficult ordinarily to get one. You have to satisfy yourself that you are gainfully employed in an area that the country needs, etc., etc., etc. Normally there's a time limit involved. Certainly such people ordinarily pay tax in South Africa. So it is, in my view, a legitimate thing to allow such people to take an interest in the politics of the country, bearing in mind the restrictions that we built in here, without necessarily having to become a citizen.
Let me play devil's advocate, and I'm not fighting with you. Imagine 5,000 permanent residents from country Vincent. All of them donate 15 million, because that's the limit. And they form a political party. And they form a political party, or they donate to whoever. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. What would stop them from? Because you're saying to me, ordinarily he pays tax, and therefore we should allow him, and I'm saying maybe we can argue about that, but I'm arguing it from the point of sovereignty. I'm just arguing it from a sovereignty point of view, personally. So I'm not here or there. All I'm saying is, if in the preamble we're saying sovereignty is a fundamental principle, then everything else that we go through must make sure that we don't undermine that fundamental principle. Whether it's sovereignty, whether it's transparency, whether it is accountability, everything else in the body. And the question that I'm asking, can I be a permanent resident without necessarily being a South African citizen? And if I can be a permanent resident without being a South African citizen, should I participate in the day-to-day politics, regardless of whether I pay tax, here, and influence the direction here about the politics here? That's the only question that I'm asking. And if it's something that we want to look at, we must look at. That's what I'm just looking at. And you explained that to us, and I agree with Honourable Self that we had this discussion about permanent residence. But let's take Lisi on to speak on this matter, and then Gumede. We're just throwing ideas, by the way.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, one shouldn't look at permanent residence as being different from citizens in the sense of sovereign interference. There's nothing to stop foreigners dealing with citizens in the same way you're suggesting they could deal with permanent residents. So that to me is not an argument to prevent it. So and I don't know what the Act says, but perhaps Michael can help us. Are permanent residents legally able to form a political party in South Africa? I somehow doubt it. The analogy using really isn't relevant in this case. So I think the point really is that if someone is a permanent resident, they're a permanent resident. They'll be here probably until they die, and therefore to preclude them from playing a role, I think would be wrong.
Will go better.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the way I understand it is, foreign person in this context includes a juristic person, which may be a company. Let me give you an example. You have a car manufacturing company in East London, and it has an interest in environmental opposing environmental regulations around East London, or a Unilever company in Germany having a particular interest that is not against the national interest, but its interest. Now, but its immediate interest, like rezoning and so forth. So, in that instance, do we include this juristic person being a company? And then if so, can they not then fund people that advance their interest in having perhaps a certain area rezoned and so forth? I'm just asking.
I thought we said if the company doesn't have a base in South Africa, then it's foreign. If the take Coca-Cola, whoever, might be on the American or the British or whatever stock, London Stock Exchange, but there is a Coca-Cola South Africa. Therefore, Coca-Cola South Africa then gets regarded as not foreign, it's eligible to think. Coca-Cola South Africa would be eligible to vote. So I'm hoping I'm out. But if that company has no footprint in South Africa, then it is deemed to be foreign. That was our understanding. I'm still talking about the permanent resident. Because what we are saying here, if things stand here, we're saying if you're a permanent resident, you are able to donate and do that. That's what we are saying here currently. The question that I was asking is that the intention, that if you're a permanent resident? And I want to go back to Honorable Lisa's story. You know, if you're a permanent resident for the next 100 years, why don't you take out citizenship? No, I'm just asking the question. I'm not fighting with them. I'm just asking it. But let's take Honorable Tlakuda, and then we'll take you. I have no problem. All I'm saying is let's not open loopholes around this thing called permanent resident as opposed to South African citizen. In the spirit, Honorable Members, of us saying foreigners, because we are very clear, if you're foreign, you can't participate. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying it's in that light. Honorable Tlakuda, Honorable Self, Honorable Mulder, and then we will agree how we take it forward. Tlakuda.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. On the issue of permanent residence, I'm now thinking of NGOs who are in the country and are being funded by foreign governments for them to push the interests of those governments. Then the NGOs are South African residents, but funded by foreign government to push their own interests. Do we include them on this particular on this issue? Are we also referring to them? Because we know NGOs are pushing other people's agendas. Their interest will be on that other country's interest, not the country where they reside.
When we get Honorable Self?
Yes, I think that is already dealt with elsewhere in the bill, but just, you asked a very explicit question, why does somebody who's a permanent resident for a long period not take out citizenship? I'll give you a practical example. We had a next door neighbor who where I live, and he was a British citizen who had a pension from England. If he became a South African citizen, he would lose that pension. So he was a permanent resident, he lived here for 40 years or something, 45 years, but he knew that if he took out South African citizenship, which he was very keen to do, he would just lose his citizenship. That's the sort of category that I'm talking about.
Honorable Murder?
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to give some information on what we are talking about, and we are now on the terrain of the Department of Home Affairs. If you look at what the Department of Home Affairs say, they say the following. Applications for permanent residency takes place in terms of the Immigration Act. And before you can apply for permanent residency, you first have to convince the minister that you are not a prohibited person. Now, a prohibited person is a bad person. It's all the bad things. You've been convicted of this, and you are a member of... No, it's true. You can have a look. They are bad people, prohibited persons. So the policy and the law says in order to make an application for a permanent resident, let me just go one step back. The department says permanent residency permits emphasis is placed on immigrants who are in a position to make a meaningful contribution to broadening the economic base of South Africa. That's a policy. Then you've got to convince the department and the minister that you're not a prohibited person. There are a lot of categories of all the bad ones. And then it says, in order to make an application for a permanent residency permit, applicants must first submit representations to the Minister of Home Affairs motivating why he or she should be declared not to be a prohibited person or an undesirable person. And then you must then apply through the process. In order to make an application for a permanent residency permit, applicants must first submit a representation to the Minister of Home Affairs motivating why he or she should be declared not to be a prohibited person or an undesirable person. It is only after the Minister of Home Affairs has declared a prospective immigrant not to be a prohibited undesirable person that application to permanent residency status can be submitted. Once you have received a positive response from the Minister of Home Affairs, you may submit an application to either a direct residency permit or a residency on other grounds permit. Then, now the two differences is this. The category of permits apply to foreigners who are in possession of a permanent work offer in South Africa or have exceptional skills and qualifications, intend to establish a business in South Africa, qualify as refugees in terms of the Refugees Act, qualify as a retired person, are financially independent, or relatives of a South African citizen. Or you can apply for a special permit where applicable, so and so and so, and then it goes basically on, and you have to have resided in South Africa for 5 years before you can apply for permanent residency, and then the minister must grant that, and it must be tabled in the house who have been given permanent residency. We've had, you know, affairs recently with regard to that. In many instances, permanent residency is a step that people take before they later on become citizens. It's a process that they go through. So all I'm putting on the table is this is what we are talking about when you talk about people who are permanent residents.
That's fine. So we're happy with the definition. We'll come back. I think Honorable Nakuda's point, Honorable Self, you said he's covered somewhere else. The point was a foreign interest donates to a legitimate South African who then, NGO, yes, I mean it could be broader than an NGO for that matter, it could be an individual NGO and that person donates, and you say we covered it somewhere else. Can we hold that one? And if it's not covered anywhere else, we'll come back and visit it. Is that okay, Honorable Members? You remind us about that one, okay? So, can we then move to page number 5, Honorable Members? I didn't pick up anything, and I don't think we asked them to do anything on number 5. But if members have, you can raise it, Honorable Self.
Sorry, again, I come back to 2.1, clause 2.1, in the last line, by providing for the funding of political parties that are represented in.
2.1.
2.1, yeah. As opposed to participating.
Represented in national and provincial legislatures. That's the proposal before you. If you want, we will allow you, Honorable Miller.
Well, I'm saying, Chairperson, I hear what has been said. The term participating is a term used in the Constitution in 236. It says parties participating.
Absolutely, I was going to go to that point because 236 talks about participating. And remember, we had that whole debate, what does participate mean in English? So we had that discussion earlier on. Would you live with that, Honorable Self?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think you can't participate unless you are elected.
And represented and all those. Okay. Anything on page number 5, Honorable Members? And then can we move to page number 6? Are we happy with page 6? Remember, we'll do clause by clause on Tuesday. All we're doing now is to make sure that they have accurately reflected what we're doing. So this is by no means adopting. This is just making sure that they have accommodated all our concerns of Tuesday. Page 7. Any? Platsi Siva. Thank you. Page number 8. I don't remember us asking them to do anything on page number 8, but if you have, you can. Page number 9, I only see a positive change. D, where we put in defray legal costs. Remember, we'd asked them to do that. So that's the only change that I see in page number 9 that they added. But is there anything else people want to talk about, honorable members want to talk about on page number 9? And the insertion that they have there, we accurate, it's what we wanted. Thank you. Thank you, Michael and Prof. Page number 10, I see number 5 that talks about the principle of prescribed amount. Remember the foundations, we put the prescribed amount. And a juristic person must disclose. That's the dual disclosure. So those are the two additions they put in which we had requested. That is 9.2. Those are the only two that I see. But if there's anything else, well, we can talk to those two as well if you want to. I'll just bring them to your attention that those are new things. Honorable self.
I'll come back to it, I suppose, when it occurs. But section sub 5 of 8.5 must also be included in 20, I think it's now the new 24, which is the prescriptions or the...
Yeah,
eight, no, it's not. Well, it's not mine.
All right. Other than that, those additions, anything else on page 10? And we're happy with the 5 and we're happy with the 2 because those are the new ones that they brought in. H5 and 9.2. Happiness. Thank you. Page number 11. Honourable self.
Yes. There have been, as I see it, some subtle changes to Clause 10. And that deals with the authorisation by a party to collect donations. And while I understand the thinking behind that, I wonder about the practicality of it. Because I don't know about your party, but mine, you know, money gets collected by people going door to door. And so we'll either authorise the entire Democratic Alliance membership to go and collect money, or we will run into some form of trouble. But I'd just like to know why it's necessary to have authorised by the party in that particular clause.
Okay. Honourable Gumede.
I'm trying to understand what the former speaker is saying, because what in if now that was an unauthorized person as well. You see, we're saying that they should be authorized to collect money for it. But what if it is done by somebody that is unauthorized? How do we manage that? Because I think we want here to have a regulated collection of money. And then perhaps you may be against authorized, but I think you still need to assist us. Thanks.
I think what we were trying to say, and I agree with you, how enforceable it is. I think what we were saying is that anybody and everybody that purports to collect money on behalf of a political party, that money must find its way into the bank account of the political party. That was the essence of what we were trying to say. But then I recall on Prof. Cheadle saying, and we must look at it practically. Prof. Cheadle says, you know, we're doing door-to-door, and we're thirsty in, where do you come from, man? Ellis. I come from elders. You thirsty in elders, and you go to the corner shop and you say, give us 15 Cokes or give us 5 rand to go and buy Kentucky. Me and my task team or our table that's there. It's not going to go to the bank of the political party because that's money we're raising now for an event now. And it happens all the time when we do door-to-door and elections work. Whilst I agree with the principle, I'm just saying we must also not create something that is going to be just... that somebody just for the sake of bringing self into trouble says, I saw self collecting, or I saw the ANC collecting. I'm just saying we need to craft it, but I think we understand the principle. But honestly, honourable members, I can tell you if you didn't go to door, and there's some rich guy there, we say to him, give us money for bunny chows. And after we're working, we go and sit at some stock fair, have a bunny chow, have a beer, and it really was given to us on the basis. I just don't know how we want to craft it, but I understand what you guys were saying, but somebody wants to talk to it that... I think there's no harm, I see that. I think there's no harm in putting it in there and hoping that we appeal to people's conscience. That's all I can say, but let's have a second round of what we are saying about number 10 in terms of unauthorized donations. Let's start with Honourable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. I think we covered in that bunny chows on the corner and our ikasis and stuff because we only have to declare, what, over 100,000. So doing door-to-door is not going... I mean, our chances of getting 100,000 going door-to-door is another issue. So I think we covered in that regard. And I'm sure any person in a political party who is going to receive 100,000 rand in a donation more than likely is going to have to be authorized. And an organization can, each political party can work that into their constitution or make a resolution on who's allowed to pick that up. Thank you.
No, I think that covers us. So what you're arguing, we'll come back to you and just to see. What you're arguing, having it there is not going to open any flood doors because beyond the limit anyway, you have to declare, and it'll probably be in writing. But let's take Lakuda and take Singh on this point.
Chair, I agree with what my colleague is saying here. But how then do we prevent some criminal elements from collecting in the name of a certain political party, even if it's less than 100,000? Then how do we prevent that?
I guess that's party discipline. We'll have to do it as a party. We can't legislate for that, I think. Honourable Singh, on that point?
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm sorry I had to go out and take the urgent call. I think this also protects us as political parties. And you know, because even in NGOs and other organisations, you get everybody, somebody coming to you, I'm collecting for FOSA, I'm collecting for child welfare, and they don't have the authority to do so. Here, if I'm the Treasurer General, or if I've got a provincial treasurer, he must give a letter of authority to Vincent Smith, who is going to join my party soon, right, to go out and collect money. So it also protects us. And I think we should just leave it there for what it's worth.
All right. Honourable Mulder, you'll be the last one, otherwise we're moving to 12, because there doesn't seem to be any harm in having it there.
I didn't listen, Chairperson, but I think I'm just asking. Isn't the idea that 10 should be connected to the threshold and that's it?
I think that is what Matthijs is saying. That if it's connected to the threshold, it covers us in all respects.
Chair, yeah, sorry.
The wording doesn't connect it currently. Why am I wrong?
No, you are right, because the definition of donation is much wider than the threshold. And if we say donations in excess of the threshold may only be collected by authorised people, then I'm all for that.
Can that fly? It's a policy issue. Can we start there? I was going to say that, because it puts us into all sorts of trouble beyond. Will you guys put it in there? Okay, so that is point 10. So we're talking wherever you say people receive beyond the threshold. I mean, you must add those words or something that affect beyond the threshold. Anything else on page number 11? By Ranki. Page 12. page 13. I can tell you that 13.5, we remember we were arguing about the Auditor General and people said he can't walk in, and we said as long as it's only about public funds, so they've added that. The last three or four words on number five, so they've catered for that. That's the only one that I picked up. Anything else on page 13? Honorable Matthijs, and then Honorable Lies, you want to talk to it? To 13? Okay.
Was here in the Act where we needed to capture that we're changing the reporting system, was it in the schedule? Because at the moment, the reporting we use like some old accounting system, yeah, graph and gap. So it was captured in the schedule or in here?
In the regulations.
Oh, in the regulations. I didn't see it in the regulations either. It is there. Okay. Just make sure that it's there because it messes up with our flow of doing our audited financial statements thing.
Honorable Lies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the audit. I am on page 13 and it's clause 5. The Auditor General is highly unlikely to arrive at our offices at midnight on a Sunday evening. However, this clause allows the Auditor General to do that, may at any time. And I would request that we put the word any reasonable time, just to ensure that that doesn't happen.
We can do that. We can do that. And you guys will look for GRAP and then you'll talk to us about GRAP or GAR. Number 14, I've asked, beg your pardon, page 14. We never asked them from where I was sitting and I haven't picked up anything. Anybody wants to talk to 14, page 14? Page 15, I never picked up anything that we asked them and I never picked up any other additions or subtractions or deletions. Anybody wants to talk to page 15? Page 16, Honourable Self, on page number 16.
Yes, I don't recollect us having agreed to introduce the question of offences and penalties on page 16 at the bottom. I don't recollect us having a discussion where we agreed to criminalise. I thought we'd stuck to the fines. That was, as I distinctly remember, the discussion.
They can speak for themselves, but I do recall the IEC saying that we should give them, and not them to affect the criminal, but for them to be able to say this is a criminal act and to go to the IEC.
I know the IEC said that. I don't know whether we said that.
No. Yeah, you're right. I'm saying, maybe you should have that discussion. The IEC was saying it's well and good that you guys can put all these punitive things, but if there's no real fear of criminal proceedings put to anybody, it's not going to have too much teeth. I think that was what they argued at the time. And our colleagues put it in, is there any harm? Because remember what we are saying. We are saying that all these things will be ultimately adjudicated by the courts, not by the IEC or by anybody else. So would it be wrong for us to say to the IEC, you can go and argue for criminal proceedings and not civil or something like that? I don't think there would be any harm in us saying the IEC must do that, but it's open up to members here. But I was trying to give the context in which that discussion was held. Because for me, if the IEC can go and suggest it as the prosecutor to the court and go and suggest it and not implement it, I see no harm, because even if they are proposing something that is inherently unfair, I think the judiciary would come back and say to them, but I think it's unfair. So that's my stance, honorable members, and I don't think there will be any harm, but let's hear what members are saying. Shabu. Thank you. Honorable Self, is that all right with us?
I guess so.
We had the discussion. We might not have rubber stamped it, but we had the discussion, yeah. Okay. Page number 17. I think they added that whole 19, eh? page 17, certainly 2A and B, the last two you added, it wasn't there before, but Honourable Self?
Yes. I would like to talk to clause 23, because I've had a look at 20 sub 3. And I've had a look at section 20 sub 2 of the Electoral Commission Act, and I don't understand what it is that is being not made applicable to reviews or appeals.
Take us there. And are we happy with, remember we had that argument about PFMA and others saying that it should be a minimum of X and Y and Z. Are we happy with 2A and B?
Well, I'll come on to that when we look at the schedule.
Okay. For now, we can pass it. Can you guys just go and revisit Section 22 of the Electoral Commission Act does not apply to reviews or appeals under this Act. Remember, the whole argument was, even if you feel hard done by, you have the right to go in for review. That was the discussion, and you guys seem to be thinking that it's important to put that. If you guys can come back, put that on in the next few minutes or so. And we'll go back to 2A and B if self, Honourable Self thinks we must go back to that. Page 18. I can indicate to members that we then have just put what we discussed, 18.21.1, where we said the IEC may open up a second unit. That's the only addition that they put there that I picked up. And that is 21. And it talks to Honourable Self. We said it must go in there as long as we know that it's got work to do and not a nice to have. Anything else on page 20 and on page 18? Page 19, I didn't pick up anything personally, Honourable Self. Page 19.
Under 24.1, I referred to it earlier, that 8.5 needs to come in there.
8.5. Anything else on page 19? Page 20. Page 20. I didn't pick up anything personally on page 20. And then we get to page 21 where there were the wholesale changes. Can we talk to page 21? Let's allow Honourable Self.
Yes, sir. I thought we distinctly agreed the other day that the percentage would be of the allocation from the represented political party fund. That is not what appears in this bill.
I picked it up because we said it will be very clear from the onset exactly how much parties would be eligible to receive from the represented political party fund. Therefore, if we say, if you are caught on the wrong side of the law on anything of these categories, you will be liable to lose 80% of that we know, or 10% of that we know. Here, it seems to me that you're talking about money that will come from the or the multi-party democracy fund. That's what I read it to be here. Yeah.
These offences and fines apply to political parties that are not represented also. So that's why we've suggested income, and you can just then reduce the percentages. Since you have to have an audited statement to the IEC, it'll be from the previous year's audited statement that you would determine it. But if we link it to the representative fund, then there are those political entities, the fronts, and those political parties that don't have representation that ought to be fined because they have illegally accepted money from foreign governments. Then they would not be able to be fined. So, and then they would be subject to the lower amounts that are contained here. So it's that is really the basis for that.
This question that we're all going to ask is, how are you going to, who's going to police, how are you going to know if a unrepresented, for want of a better word, political party receives foreign money? Because are they duty bound to declare? No? Are they? I'm just asking the question.
Under this bill, they're duty bound to declare. People engage in criminal contact. They don't obey the law. And it's normally whistleblowers. It's normally policing and prosecution that finds these things out. So the fact is that if someone gets foreign money, it might be picked up through FICA, going into the account. That might spark off to the IEC. The IEC then would institute proceedings in the electoral court. Evidence would be led, and then on the basis of the previous year's audit statements, and if they hadn't done so, then they would have to produce their income, and that's how the court would have to deal with the matter. So what it says here is the income of that political party or that political entity, and you'd be able to pick up that income and work it out. So it would be something that the electoral court would do, and it would do based on the evidence provided in that particular hearing. But that's right.
Just to add to that, Chair, that would be a party that doesn't necessarily want the income to be disclosed. But we do provide for, let's say, the good parties who disclose the income in terms of 12-1 or 12-3. That income would have to be audited, and that's why we use that as the determining factor to attach the percentage to. Which I think the question last time around was from Mr. Self that how will the income that we want to attach be determined, and that the multi-party fund might be a good indicator. But for reasons that Professor Cheadle has now explained, the multi-party fund will only attach to the represented parties. So the other parties will fall through the cracks. And that's why we thought all political parties now in terms of our bill, who accept donations must declare their donations. And if they declare those donations, they must prepare statements and have their statements audited. And when we see the audited statements, that's when we know how much income they've received and how much income we can then attach. Thank you, sir.
Well, other hands, I'll come to you. I think you're opening up something that we will debate the whole day. But did you want to say something, Matthijs, and then you can come in, Mulder?
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that we discussed, because we have to submit audited financial statements and we have to declare, and it's 100% transparency. So these fines will be based on our previous financial year income, and it wasn't necessarily attached to the represented party funding, but on our statements, by audited financial statements based on our income. Otherwise, it's not, I mean, the represented party funds, I mean, this 30% is nothing, and it's not going to divert any behavior. So my understanding is that we were attaching it to our income based on our previous financial year submissions to the IEC, and we were working on percentages, and we were not putting amounts on there. And we stand very strongly on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The unrepresented political parties do not fall through the cracks because they're caught by the 500,000, 600,000, 700,000. They don't fall through the cracks at all. They only fall through the cracks if you want to apply the percentage as a percentage, and even then they don't fall through the cracks. They are limited to the amount of the fine if you use the percentage of the fund as the alternative fine. But they don't fall through the tracks completely because they have to be caught by the fixed amount that's there or the rand amount that's there. So they don't fall through the cracks. So I would argue that it should be, in order to take account of concerns about the implications for a particular party, that it should revert to the fund amount. I can't remember that. And then those who are not represented and don't get money from the fund will be caught by the fixed amounts, whatever they happen to be.
All right. I thought never mind the falling to the crack, but I really thought in our discussions last time we discussed, because we wanted to have a predetermined amount to satisfy ourselves that the pain would be sufficient to deter, You wouldn't know the amount in the multi-party fund because it will vary from month to month, quite frankly. Whereas in the IEC fund, for want of a better word, even if you get it in tranches, we know that for the year, Party A is entitled to so many millions. And therefore 15% of so many millions will be whatever. That was what I understood the discussion to be on Tuesday. The question that I'm asking, and Honorable Self is saying, as it is here, it makes no reference to the IEC fund, for want of a better word. He talks only to the multi-party democracy fund. And I think the sentiment from this side is it should apply to the IEC fund because there's certainty. That's the argument, that there's certainty in terms of what 10% is. You don't know what's 10% of the multi-party fund, as we speak.
There is certainty on an audited statement of income. The audited statement of the previous year will tell you how much this political party received. So I think the certainty is there, but to the extent that you wish to link it to representative political party fund, it creates rather tricky drafting, but not something that Mr. Prince and myself aren't able to resolve. But the reason why we made this insertion, and we do that as drafters, is because if you go to the representative political party fund, then you don't have a percentage deterrent in respect of those parties that do not and don't get allocations from the representative political party fund. So that's the reason for it. Of course, if you don't agree with it, I mean, obviously, we can. It will make for rather complicated drafting, but it's not impossible.
So look at, if the members look at the first line of first line column 3,
page
21 of the schedule. So that relates to a contravention of section 8, for instance. Political parties may not accept donations from the following sources, foreign governments. So now your first offense there, if you are found guilty, could be 500,000 or 10% of that. Now if we link it to 10% of a fund, the represented parties will in all likelihood lose 10% of the allocated money. The other party who's not represented, and we don't know what amount they get, but they will only pay 500,000. But the amount that they could have gotten could be a huge amount, but they would only pay 500,000 because they don't get money from a fund, so we can't use the second indicator. And for that reason that we said audited income, because we'd know what their income was, the entire state of the income. But like Professor Chiel said, it is a matter of policy. We can change it, but that is the implication, and that's what we try to prevent.
Honorable Bates.
Chair, we are of a very strong opinion that if this is going to work and we are really serious about transparency and about disclosure and about making sure, well, exactly what we are doing here. There's no way that even a 1,000 rand fine or even 30% of represented political party funding is going to have any impact on any political party, and I can tell you that now. The represented political party funding, which is what we receive from the IEC, is a very small amount than what political parties receive overall. Because remember, there's money we get from provinces, that is also political party funding. It's nothing. So if you are going to contribute and take money from a foreign fund for 3 million and you know you're only going to pay 1,000 rand or forfeit 30% of the money you're only going to get from the IEC, it's not going to work. So we are motivated very strongly that it must be based on audited income from the previous financial year and based on a percentage. Otherwise, this is a wasted exercise. And we've just come here just to, play nice with the public who wants to know who is giving us money.
You've convinced me.
Thanks.
It took a long time, but I'm convinced. Okay, so we can live with it as it is. Thank you so much. Honourable members, then Honourable Mull, was it? No, it was Honourable Lacune's point. And Honourable Self, your points are all covered now. There was nothing that we put. I think you said we must keep one until we have this debate. But I'm not going to stir on this nest. If you find, you find. I'm sure of that.
What says is what?
Oh. And the regulations, Honourable Matthijs, your general accepted accounting practices are covered. Honourable Matthijs, that GAAP is covered in the regulations. That's fine. All right. Honourable members, can I then take it that this piece of paper that you have, I think there was one change. Those few changes you'll affect. Please affect those changes. Do whatever needs to be done. You will bring this piece of paper. You will bring the regulations. You will bring the report. And you will bring the objects to us on Tuesday for adoption. I'm saying those are the things that we can expect. Can we have this tomorrow? Can we have more tomorrow? Okay. All right. Cindy's, but that's our own business here, isn't it? Okay. So, honourable members, what is going to happen is that we're going to get before close of business on Monday all these things plus the report for us to look at. I mean, the report really is, if you'll recall that we had the interim report, it will now be converted into a final report. And the report is really the progress or what we've done. And that is the report that will go to the House, saying, having done X, Y, and Z, we thought the solution to this is this added bill, and therefore we're including the bill as part of our report. Adopt it here, take it to the House, debate the report at the House. If it's accepted, this committee ceases to exist, it then becomes a process of the House. That's how I see the process going forward. Honourable Self.
My question about Section 22 of the Electoral Commission Act has not yet been asked.
Can you report on that one? Yes.
The subsection states in A that the Electoral Court may hear and determine an appeal against any decision of the Commission only insofar, and that's an important point, only insofar as such decision relates to the interpretation of any law or any other matter. So it's limited to interpretation. What the Electoral Court will be doing in this case is not limited to an interpretation of this Act or the Electoral Act or the Electoral Commission Act. It will be, in fact, making a determination as to whether the sanction should be enforced. Then B says, no such appeal may be heard save with a prior appeal of the chairperson of the Electoral Court. Now, and C says, such an appeal shall be heard, considered, and summarily determined upon written submission submitted within 3 days after leave to appeal was granted. Now, this is to cater for the expedited nature of these electoral court proceedings in an election, because a decision has to be made very quickly during the election period. So that is why we looked at this section. The authorising section giving the Electoral Court the power to impose sanctions, which was, you know, this committee has right from the very beginning insisted that that's where it should be housed and not in the Commission, lies now in this bill. But we had to remove reference to subsection 2 because, A, it limited it only to issues of law, interpretation of law, and secondly, the other two paragraphs in that subsection deal with summary proceedings, and there's no need in this case for there to be summary proceedings. One could just go in the ordinary manner before the Electoral Court, which is, by the way, a High Court, and so the proceedings will be dealt with in the ordinary course.
Honourable, let's start with Honourable Self on that matter. Okay, all right. Anybody else wants to comment on that matter? Honourable Matthijs and Honourable Singh on that matter.
I don't have a comment.
Oh, just general comments. Okay.
Just clarity. So there's no conflict between this bill and the current Electoral Act in terms of what we're doing. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yeah, Chairperson, I know we would have met our mandate by the 30th because the National Assembly ad hoc committee, this ad hoc committee, would have been given the job to do, which I think collectively has been done extremely well, even if I may say so as a member of this committee. But thanks to you and our legal people. But having said that, Chair, I think now that the Deputy Chief will be here, It was our intention to ensure that this is done as expeditiously as possible. It has been done from our side. I would hate to see it being held up unduly in the NCOP. So I think there has to be some discussion with the NCOP to see how they can deal with their part of it as expeditiously as possible as well. Thank you.
That is for the powers that be, but I'm hoping, Deputy, you'll assist us in that regard as being part of the intestines of the running of the organization, if you can say that. Honourable members, then just for the record, we're but one meeting away from concluding our business. And that meeting on Tuesday shouldn't be a very long meeting. It's really about the formal adoption. After that, Cindy and the team will then ATC it and do whatever needs to be done. And then I would imagine WIP and company, you guys will then take it to the programming so that it's programmed and addressed at least by the 30th to meet our deadline. And I don't know how the process works, but I would assume a debate will ensue, and we'll debate the matter and then take it from there. Okay, Honourable. Honourable members, what will then happen is that we will receive everything that we need to receive by close of business on Monday, and we reconvene here at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and it shouldn't be too long a meeting. 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and I'm hoping that by lunchtime we're done, and we then will meet in the 30th. To our colleagues and friends that have walked this journey with us from civil society, thank you very much. We're almost there. Thank you. We'll acknowledge today, and also in the debate we'll acknowledge your support. Thank you very much, honourable members. The meeting is adjourned until Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.